Last week, I gave a talk on the Four Noble Truths. And the Four Noble Truths describe kind of the core perspective of Buddhism on the path of practice. And it calls forth not just not a belief, but rather as an orientation to understand our life, and then a practice to engage with our life. It kind of offers a path of practice and engagement. And separate from that is people's kind of emotional, heartfelt relationship to the Four Noble Truths or the Eightfold Path, with the practice of Buddhism, what the Buddha had to teach. And for Buddhists down through the ages, it's not uncommon for people to have a very deep, heartfelt connection to these teachings and to the path and practice that's offered. And in fact, that heartfelt connection to it is a very important part, because it often fuels people's motivation in practice and inspiration. And so it's not just meant to be a kind of a dry, you know, description of a path, but rather it's also meant to be something that actually inspires people. And in that inspiration, there's a more heartfelt engagement in this, what we're talking about. And that sense of heartfelt inspiration, or that relationship that Buddhists will often have, is sometimes described as going for refuge. And so today what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about the notion of refuge, some of the different aspects of it as it appears in Buddhism. And down through the centuries, it's been a very important aspect of Buddhist spirituality, the idea of refuge. It's a rich term, it's a rich idea. In the Dhammapada, there's verses here that tie together the Four Noble Truths and the refuges. The classic formulation of the refuges, which I'll describe what the refuge is in a minute, but is a refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So in the Dhammapada it says, but when someone going for... Well, let's read the whole thing. People threatened by fear go to many refuges, to mountains, forests, parks, trees, and shrines. None of these is a secure refuge. None is a supreme refuge. Not by going to such a refuge is one released from all suffering. But when someone going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, but when someone going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha sees with right insight the Four Noble Truths, suffering, the arising of suffering, the overcoming of suffering, and the Eightfold Path leading to the ending of suffering, this is the secure refuge. This is the supreme refuge. By going to such a refuge, one is released from all suffering. So one of the interesting ideas here is it's contrasting what is a secure and what's an insecure refuge. And many people will take refuge or depend on things which maybe in some ultimate way are not dependable. So some people take refuge in their bank account. And I've known people here back in the heyday of the kind of the big boom in the 90s. I knew a number of people would come here and talk to me and were really counting on those stock options. And they had a lot of dependence on these stock options that usually when I heard the story, they were worthless. You know, they were hoping and building a whole future on them, and then suddenly it didn't happen. And so people were depending on it to some degree. People sometimes depend on certain jobs, their career. People depend on their health. People depend on relationships. People take refuge in the banks, or people take refuge in the government. People take refuge in their intelligence or their capacity. There's many things people depend on. And in a sense, there's nothing wrong about relying or utilizing these things when they're healthy and appropriate. But it can be a shock when people discover that they weren't ultimately dependable. When something occurs, it takes it away. People whose health, for example, suddenly takes a dramatic, you know, from one day to the next shift. And people went, what happened? And I can't, you know, can't depend on this anymore. Or the banks suddenly decide that your money is worthless, which has happened when I was living in Burma. And at the bank, the government decided that all the currency that people had, all the main currency that people had, overnight was considered worthless. So imagine U.S. government saying, sorry, you guys. And that'd be okay, because if you had money in the bank, then it was okay. That money was still considered good. But in Burma, no one trusted their banks. So they had lots of cash under the mattresses at home. And all that cash, just its value vanished overnight. And it was kind of coarse paper, so you couldn't really use it for toilet paper even. So it doesn't take a lot of evoking this idea that people will go for refuge in things which maybe are not ultimately a refuge. So here they talk about going to the mountains, forests, parks, trees, and shrines. And some people run away from the city or urban life to try to find refuge or safety someplace else. And in shrines, it's not uncommon for people to go to religions as a kind of refuge or dependence, that somehow the religion is going to somehow provide the solution. And in the same way with Buddhism, I think there are sometimes quite unhelpful ways of taking refuge in Buddhism or Buddhist practice. Sometimes people hold on to it like a lifesaver, and they hold on to the rituals of it, they hold on to the doctrine, they hold on to the community, hold on to teachers, in a way that's not ultimately dependable. All those things can somehow shift and change. And here in this passage then, what it's saying, for someone who has taken refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, if there is understanding, deep understanding of the Four Noble Truths, then this is a secure refuge. So the idea of the Four Noble Truths providing a very deep refuge for us. So the idea of refuge is an interesting term. It has a connotations or alternative translations of the word sarana include protection or safety. It's sometimes refuge is likened to that of being in a secure cave. I guess, you know, back in the old days, a cave was a secure, good place to be, protected from the forces around you. So it has this idea of some place of protection and support or safety. But it might lend itself, the idea of refuge, to the idea of kind of passive dependence. There's kind of passivity to it. You can just kind of relax, and somehow you'll be taken care of. I'm connected now to one of the great world religions, and now everything will be okay for me. I just have to be connected to it, kind of hold on to it. Or somehow the Buddha, take refuge in the Buddha. The Buddha, somewhere in some ethereal realm, is going to somehow watch over me and make sure that I'm okay. The idea of refuge in Theravada Buddhism does not imply something passive, something that you can just float on and relax. It implies something that we enter into, and it has three connotations. The idea of refuge, it has the idea of a choice that we make, so an intentionality, a determination, orientation, a choice, a direction for our life. Second, it implies an understanding. It comes with a certain understanding. And sometimes the idea of refuge in the later Theravada tradition is considered to be synonymous with understanding. And the third is that it involves a degree of heartfeltness or emotional connectedness. Some people would like to use the word faith, perhaps, for some of that. But a kind of an emotional kind of inspiration or movement within us. And as a determination or a choice, I like to think of refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha as the Buddha and Dharma and the Sangha is resonating with something inside of us that has meaning. So it's not that the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha is something out there as much as it represents, it's symbolic of something that we recognize, come to recognize in ourselves, if nothing else, as a potential. So in the example of the Buddha certainly it's nice to be inspired and in some ways think about the Buddha as a wonderful teacher and go to his teachings for help in our spiritual life. And some people take refuge in the Buddha in that capacity. But there's a whole other thing to take refuge in the Buddha not as a person, but as an exemplar of someone who has discovered a degree of peace and awakening and liberation, which is our potential as well. The Theravadan tradition very adamantly will say the Buddha was not a god. The Buddha was a human being. And later in other forms of Buddhism, sometimes the Buddha takes on kind of godlike qualities. But in this early tradition, the Buddha was like us. Maybe unusually bright or spiritual adept or something. But still, he was like us. And in that like being like us, whatever he discovered in terms of freedom and liberation and love and compassion is something that we can discover as well. So take refuge in the Buddha also implies us taking refuge in this, recognizing this is something in me as well. This is the potential that I have. To take refuge in the Dharma has also the sense of something external can have. It's the Buddha's teachings. It's the practices that he taught to put those teachings into place. And it's also the realizations that come when we do those practices. So the Dharma here has three meanings. The teachings, the putting them into practice, and the result of putting them into practice. And then, and that's how supposed to kind of, so the teachings are kind of external, but putting them into practice and discovering them for ourselves, Dharma in ourselves, is the internal refuge, discovering in ourselves. So going for refuge doesn't imply just something external, but also something that happens within us. And then the community implies a little bit of the same thing as well. The community is that those people who have somehow tasted the results of the practice, somehow have some taste, you know, some seen some results of practicing in their life. But then also taking refuge to the internal Sangha is taking refuge in the those good qualities within ourselves, the potential in ourselves that we see in the external Sangha, the external community of practitioners. So there's this internal and external movement that goes on. So there has to be the sense of recognizing in ourselves something that we kind of also recognize outside. There's a resonance that happens. And then there's a choice to make this a central orientation for one's life. Generally, for people to take refuge, this recognition, this is really important. This is I'm acknowledging something that's really important for me. A direction for my life, the orientation, a ground from which my life is going to be lived. So, in a sense, what the refuge represents for Buddhists, it represents that the world that we live in is given a certain meaning. It's given a certain sense of purpose, what life is about. Many people will encounter in their life lots of suffering, a lot of difficulties, and a lot of confusion. There's a lot of choices we have to make in life about how to live our lives. And it can be quite overwhelming for some people, life circumstances. And there can be a lack of existential meaning. What's this purpose of this life? What am I doing? Where am I going? What's happening here? And the idea of refuge is in some way, is the idea of, this world that I live in now has meaning. Maybe not meaning because it's external meaning. You can go read meaning in the, some place externally, perhaps. But rather you have a sense that I choose now. I'm making a choice. That now my life has this meaning. Meaning in the sense of this purpose. And this purpose is that a spiritual life, to use kind of colloquial, kind of generic language perhaps, ecumenical language, that my life now has a spiritual base, a spiritual purpose or spiritual meaning. In a Buddhist context, it means, you could say a little bit more refined, you could say, my life now has a Buddhist meaning or Buddhist purpose. Some people are allergic to that kind of language. To be a little bit more refined even still and more to the point, that my life now is oriented or given meaning around the movement from freedom from suffering, the movement to liberation. And whether it's for oneself or for others or for both, that somehow that movement is making sense of this world. Yes, there is an ultimate purpose here. There's a purpose to be liberated from suffering. And the result of that liberation is an experience of peace, unbounded, boundless peace and love. And that's something that is important for me. And this is kind of, I'm going to make this kind of the orientation that's really important. Some people will do it 100%. They make their whole life that orientation. Some people, in a sense, it's the kind of primary orientation, but it really infuses other things they do. They don't go off and become a monk or nun or a full-time practitioner or something, but rather they have other things to do as well. But underneath it all is that background, or that underneath that, supporting that, is the idea that there is a path I'm on here. There is a direction that I can take this life. And let me see how the other things I do can support that direction or that path, that going there. Sometimes a sense of refuge is most important for people when life is most difficult. So that when there's some kind of crisis in our life, it can be a health crisis, or someone's going to die, someone's dying or dead in our family or close one, or there's social disruption, or there's all kinds of crises that can occur. And for some people, that's a time when refuge has the most meaning, because rather than succumbing to chaos or succumbing to hopelessness, there's some sense that there is hope, there is a possibility, there's a path, there's something I can orient myself towards, there's something I can rely on. I can rely on this path, this engagement in practice that other people have done. I've known other people have done it, and so I could do it too. It gives meaning, a sense of purpose to what I'm doing here. And I've known people, a lot of people, who have found themselves in tremendous crisis in their lives. But because of their trying to be mindful and present and explore the path, find the path of practice through it, clarify their own attachments, their own fears, find where the peace and liberation is in those situations, at the end of that crisis, have grown dramatically. It really has been one of the best, sometimes occasionally it's been one of the best things that happened in their lives, even though we never wished it on them. But it really kind of propelled them into a new place. And I've also known people who had no sense of a path, no sense of a possibility, no sense of somehow some orientation which to understand their crisis. And it kind of it drained them. It kind of, you know, they kind of were snowed over, or snowed under by it, by that experience. So for Buddhists, the idea of refuge is particularly important, you know, in terms of crisis. Part of that, one form of crisis is not an external crisis, you know, but rather is a crisis in our own mind. Not everyone's mind, all the time, is a benign, friendly environment. Sometimes our minds can sometimes appear for some people to be their worst enemy. Sometimes our minds prompt us to do things that later we tremendously regret. All you have to do is read the newspapers to, you know, read all kinds of accounts of things that people probably later regretted having done. And sometimes, aside from kind of what our mind gets us to do that later we regret, our minds also can be very harsh and very critical to ourselves. And it can have certain tendencies, powerful addictive tendencies or neurotic tendencies or all kinds of things that go on in our mind that make it very hard. Sometimes a sense of trying to control things, control our life, is in hyperactive mode. Sometimes it's the opposite, that's in hyperactive mode, it's just kind of giving up, sense of hopelessness. My mind is just hopeless, I just can't get out of the sense of hopelessness. And here also the idea of refuge can be very important. The idea is maybe there is something besides your neurotic mind that you can depend on. Many people have neurotic minds without thinking of it necessarily, have taken refuge in their minds. Taking refuge in those thoughts, taking refuge, or are depending on, relying on these heavy judgments or aversive thoughts or addictions that go on, as if, you know, this is really what I have to do with my life. So sometimes the idea of refuge has tremendous meaning as an alternative to being caught up in our own mind, or an alternative to thinking that it's up to me when every attempt I make to try to find a way out of my predicament, I just seem to kind of digging my grave deeper, more and more. And so the idea of refuge for some people is a way of stepping out, realizing that out of their kind of normal kind of way of engaging the world, and relaxing and realizing perhaps there's another way besides being the one in control, the one in charge. For some people, the idea of an external Buddha Dharma Sangha is helpful for that deep relaxation. For other people, it's more an internal sense that there's some kind of self-healing, self-regulating, self-liberating possibility in the mind itself. If we just get out of the way and don't try so hard, that there is a process of liberation that's innate in who we are, and we don't necessarily have to always kind of be riding up close, but we can relax a little bit and let something else kind of carry us and hold us. So the refuge has this idea that something else besides our small self, perhaps, or egotistical self, can support and help us along in this way. So what aspects of refuge is just kind of making a choice or an orientation? This is what's important for me. And I think probably anybody involved in any spiritual tradition whatsoever, some point comes to a place where they make a choice. This is important for me. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to follow this. Sometimes spirituality can hit you from the back, through the back door, and you realize what hit you. So suddenly there's a radical change or shift or opening of something that happens. But even in that kind of situation, there's often a kind of a choice that's made. Oh yes, this is important, and I think I'll go along with this. Or there can be a choice not to go along with it, hold it, please, later. Or spirituality is very quiet. It doesn't come in through the back door as a big shock, but rather kind of slowly kind of seeps in. You hardly notice a change. But then at some point you realize this has become a really important part of my life. And there can be a change or a recognition of, oh, this is what I'm making my orientation. This is what I'm making the perspective that I'm going to hold my life in. The second aspect of refuge is that of knowing. There's an aspect of knowing in refuge, or understanding, maybe understanding or insight as part of it. So here this is very important, so you don't think that refuge is some kind of blind faith, some blind adherence or blind belief to some, the Buddha and Dharma externally. But rather it's a deeper knowing or understanding about something about the process of transformation, the process of change that our life is about. It's a deeper knowing about the potential or possibility of an alternative to being caught in the cycles of suffering, or caught in the cycles of neurosis, or caught in the cycles of fear. And so to have some sense of a knowing a path to that, knowing a way to get there, to know how to, the importance of mindfulness, to know the importance of loving kindness perhaps, to know the importance of community to practice with. There's a lot of things you could know, but at the heart is to know something like the Four Noble Truths. To somehow really understand the Four Noble Truths is not some kind of creed, but rather it's describing a process of inner change that is accessible to all of us if we just kind of turn that direction. So there's an understanding that means part of refuge. I go for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha also means then I go for refuge in what I most deeply know. What I most deeply know. And it's easy to forget that. You can really deeply know something. You have a deep experience. You can have a deep understanding, a deep practice that you have access to and know about. But in times of crisis, it might not be, you might forget about it, or you might not feel, oh, it, it just seems so far away. Going for refuge is a reminder about something hopefully the person knows. And hopefully knows, that which you know is most deeply. What do you know? So take refuge in that. Rely on that, depend on that, be inspired by that. Then the third form of refuge is that of, aspect of refuge, is that of the kind of an emotional connection to this. So this is going to be a kind of a heartfeltness, kind of a heart is into it. So it's not a sense of duty, it's not a sense of obligation. Maybe it's not even, so serious. I like to think when I was... And then living in the Buddhist monastery for several years, I went up to the teacher there and said, I don't really take anything that seriously anymore. But the thing I take most seriously is my practice. Now, that could be a symptom of someone who's depressed. Don't take anything so seriously anymore. But it was actually an expression of the freedom that I was beginning to feel. And I wasn't someone who was blowing things off and didn't care about things. Actually, I cared about things more after my years of practice. But I held them much more lightly than I had before. So that sense of lightness. And And so hopefully the sense of the Four Noble Truths, the sense of refuge, brings us a lightness of being to us rather than a heaviness. But also can bring a sense of joy and happiness and warmth within us. So this idea of refuge also has a sense of warmth or happiness or gladness, something that gladdens the heart and the mind. So when Buddhists go for refuge, and you do like go through the refuge ceremony or chant the refuges, they're also connecting to something that's emotional within them. And so that emotionality sometimes is evoked. Sometimes the emotional aspect, if it's the only thing that's evoked, can be kind of blind devotion or unhealthy kind of devotionalism. But if you understand that emotional quality being evoked together with a choice of orientation, of taking responsibility for our lives and saying, this is what I'm going to do, and a sense of a deep understanding, then I think it really, the emotional aspect gives a lot of warmth and joy to the other aspects of the path. So Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, taking refuge in these things. The word refuge here is, I'm talking about it because in the Buddhist tradition, it's a very rich concept. And so to give you a sense of the richness of it, so maybe you can have a sense of how you want to relate to it. Now, in somewhat quiet, a little bit kind of, think of it maybe quiet back water areas of Buddhism, and in the places where the Buddha taught, the teachings of the Buddha, that often I've noticed, kind of slipped it in a little bit like a footnote. And a little bit in the footnote in the tradition is down to the centuries. In the Theravada tradition, there's also the notion of a fourth refuge. So there's mostly people talk about three refuges, but there is sometimes a fourth one which is mentioned. And in some of the non-Theravada traditions, like the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, the fourth refuge is the guru. And in some Tibetan traditions where the guru is the refuge, there is a very clearly a sense of surrendering your own choice, your own will, and the guru is going to decide things for you. Who you're going to marry, what practices you're going to do, you know, just kind of surrender as part of that. You're supposed to see the guru as kind of like the Buddha, the all-knowing, all-wise Buddha, and whatever they say and do is great. In the Theravada tradition, there is no sense of a guru like this. What a teacher in the Theravada tradition is called a Kalyanamitta. And that's one of the terms. There's other terms too, but one of the ideas is a Kalyanamitta. And a Kalyanamitta is a Pali word which means good spiritual friend. And the important word is the word friend, mitta. And so rather than someone who's your guru, the teacher is someone who's meant to be your friend. And part of the reason for that is that the path of practice in Theravada Buddhism is something you have to undertake for yourself, something you have to walk yourself. The Buddha's only, the teachers only point the way and encourage you and mentor you and support you as you do something. Basically, maybe we're in Theravada tradition, teachers are coaches. You know, now we have executive coaches, all kinds of coaches. And so we're kind of like coaches because you have to do the work. So we're kind of friends. The idea is more friends for people rather than someone who kind of hierarchically higher above is telling you what to do. So the fourth refuge is not the teacher, the guru. In Theravada tradition, the fourth refuge is yourself. Isn't that nice? Since you have to walk the path yourself, there has to be some sense of reliance, some sense of dependence on yourself, that you can fall back on yourself, that somehow that you have the qualities, you have the potential for liberation, the potential for walking the path can be found in yourself, is found in yourself, and has to be found in yourself. And yourself is something that's really beautiful, something important. The Theravada tradition has this wonderfully confusing teachings where you are the ultimate you can be a refuge for yourself, and this teaching about not self. Now, how are you supposed to hold that? But the teaching of not self is not supposed to be a teaching that you don't exist and therefore you can't make any movement or effort on your own. It's rather that the teaching of not-self is all the movements that you take, all the movements of practice that you take, don't identify it with it so tightly. Don't think it is that this is who you really are. There's nothing you can take as being this is who you really are, but there still is, in a kind of a colloquial sense, me here. Generally, no one else feeds you. We feed ourselves, right? Even the people who understand that there's nothing qualifies as a self feed themselves, generally. So there's a way in which you kind of take refuge in ourselves as someone who's capable of walking the path, someone who has a dignity to walk the path, someone who has who the path can be found within us. Because the Buddhist path is not an external path. You will not find the Buddhist path at IMC. They won't be found here. Ever. So maybe you'll never come back now. Now that we've confessed it. And you will not find it at Spirit Rock. You'll not find it at Zen Center. You'll not find it at any Buddhist center anywhere in the world. The only place you'll find the Buddhist path is in your own heart. It's in yourself. So to take refuge in self is to take refuge in one's, that this is where it's found. This is where it's discovered. This is where it's created. This is where we walk it within ourselves. So taking refuge is not an act of dependence, childlike dependence on some religious ideal or some religious community or some religious leader. It's rather a movement towards adult-like responsibility, kind of a movement into kind of growing up rather than being a child. And in that growing up, as we grow up more fully, there's a beautiful thing that happens, is that our self-consciousness begins to fall away. And as our self-consciousness falls away, then the sense of self gets more and more transparent and empty. And when it gets empty enough, then we become the Buddha. We become Buddha-like. So ultimately, when you treat the refuges in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha as something external to you that you take refuge in, then conventionally people sometimes are called they are now Buddhists. If you take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, the Sangha that's within yourself, then you become a Buddha. The difference between being a Buddhist versus being Buddhist. It's very important to take that A away. Because if you are a Buddhist, then it implies perhaps the idea that you have an identity. This is who I am. I am a Buddhist. I'm one among all those different kinds of Buddhists. Whereas if you say, I am Buddhist, from my mind it implies that the inner qualities of a Buddha, the inner qualities of freedom, the inner qualities of love and compassion and caring, the inner qualities of mindfulness, that those are becoming more and more part of who we are as opposed to who we are. To take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and to understand that in doing that, that we also can take refuge in ourselves. And so. Don't take it too seriously. But it can still be the most serious thing. So thank you very much.